You are now listening to the Sports Life Talk podcast, hosted by Kevin Tumnus and Serge Vasudevic, where life without sports is just talk, on blogtalkradio.com.
Welcome to episode 10 of Sports Life Talk. I'm KT with my man, Serge. What's going on, man?
Nothing much, man. Just here on a Sunday, you know, just trying to make it through the weekend, man. It's already March now. Another month has came and went.
Can you believe how quick that went?
Yeah, man. I feel like New Year's Eve was just like a week or two ago.
Hey, man, I'm just trying to make it this week because next week is my spring break. So okay. I cannot wait. And speaking of not waiting, let's go ahead and jump into this thing, man.
Okay.
We're going to talk about our football segment, Tackling Life. And the first thing I got to ask you is Kirk Cousins, do you think he's worth that, the amount of money that they're saying he could possibly end up getting?
I think so. I think kind of predicated based off of what some of the other guys in the league have been getting money-wise. You know, some of the guys, you feel like it maybe is, you know, they're not really worth it. But at the same time, you know, you have to have an above-average quarterback to even potentially give you a chance to even make the playoffs. And then obviously you have to have probably stellar play from your quarterback to actually, you know, be able to be successful in the playoffs. So, and I think Kirk Cousins has actually shown himself to be pretty reliable, you know, given the right circumstances around him. And, you know, and obviously with the couple of teams that are looking at him, and, you know, since the Redskins already went and traded for Alex Smith, I think he is well deserving of the money that he would get, because I would still think he's in the top half of quarterbacks in the league as opposed to being in the bottom half.
And you mentioned the four teams. The four teams that is dwindled down to are the Broncos, the Jets, the Minnesota Vikings, and the Cardinals. With that said, what team would be better? Which team should he go to?
I would really like to see about him going actually to the Cardinals. I think the Cardinals with the system that they have, you know, running West Coast-style offense, you know, because they have a great running back there, and David Johnson is obviously coming off of an injury. Still got Larry Fitzgerald there. You know, got, you know, top 10-style defense, you know, with obviously Peterson and the Honey Badger. Calais Campbell, so you know, they're definitely the team that I think I would look to go to, just because of having the balance of having a running game would really help them out, and obviously the weather's a lot better there than some of the other teams.
Now, three of the four teams are known for their defenses. We got the Vikings, the Broncos, and the Cardinals. So with that said, I think I would go with Minnesota, just because I think even though Case Keenum did his thing, he got them to the NFC Championship, he wasn't able to get them to the ultimate goal, which was the Super Bowl. And I think if you had Kirk Cousins there with that defense and with Dalvin Cook coming back next year, I think Minnesota may be a better fit. But you can't go wrong with the Cardinals or Broncos. I think you can go wrong with the Jets.
Yeah, definitely go wrong with the Jets.
But with the Jets, they will have to overpay for him. And the Jets didn't do terrible last year. But if I'm Kirk Cousins, I've already shown that I'm a proven quarterback in this league, and I'm ready to make that next step. So I'm going with the Minnesota Vikings, and you said the Cardinals.
Yeah, I think going with the team that's already in the playoff chase, like the Vikings, which I don't think would be a bad selection for him. The Cardinals, who, even though they didn't make the playoffs last year, you know, they've been right there or have been in the playoffs over the, if you look even the last 4 to 6 years. And, you know, him being an experienced veteran quarterback, he obviously doesn't want to be in a, you know, a building stage of a team and try to go into somewhere where he can be that missing piece. And I think going with the Cardinals or the Vikings would definitely be helpful. And that's going to be the best way for him to obviously show his true value, is to go to a team that's already pretty much like a contender, and he could be that missing link to take him over the top.
One of the teams that got eliminated were the Jacksonville Jaguars, and that's because he would have been the perfect fit there. Could you imagine him there?
Yeah.
But now they paid Blake Bortles. Do you think that he was deserving of this payday?
Yes, he was. Based off of, you know, as much as, you know, on some of the earlier podcasts, you know, last year, you know, that we, when we were talking about the Jaguars and stuff, I could just never take him seriously. But at the end of the day, he showed, I mean, he showed me, I mean, he definitely, you know, came through in ball games where you didn't think that they would even have a chance to win. Yeah, their defense is obviously what kept them in the games, but you also still have to make the throws necessary to, you know, still keep, you know, points on the board. So I think he was deserving of the contract that he got. And he obviously didn't get, like, maybe the 22 to 25 million a year, but like some of the other better quarterbacks get. So if he got something ridiculous like that where he got paid like a top five quarterback, then maybe. But with the money that he got, I think he's definitely good. And I think he definitely earned it.
Yeah, I'm not going to say any player doesn't deserve to get paid. But if I were just scanning the whole league, I think I would have held out. And I would have went with Kirk Cousins if I was a Jacksonville Jaguars.
Yeah.
With that said, Blake Bortles did ball. He wasn't the reason why they lost to the Patriots. It wasn't his fault at all.
No.
So, yeah, go ahead and pay the man his money. Yeah, whatever. It's Blake Bortles. I don't.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So, speaking of trade talks, Michael Bennett with the Seattle Seahawks. The Seahawks, I guess they're trying to, you know, feel the situation and throw that out there that they're interested in trading him. Do you think that would be smart?
I don't think so. I feel like the only reason that they should be trading him is because he's a bad person in the locker room or he's just not good for the team. But, I mean, he's one of the better, you know, pass rushing linemen in the league. So I don't understand why they're not only, you know, potentially trading him and some of the other guys is almost starting to look like the team, especially on the defensive side of the ball, is starting to look a lot different. You know, I guess you got kind of spoiled with the Legion of Doom, but, you know, it is what it is. But I don't think it would be smart on their end to move him. But, you know, they have something up their sleeve where they want to go in a different route. They want to get younger, get some draft picks in return. Because you would get some, you know, I would feel like some substantial, definitely a first rounder, you know, to be able to trade into somebody else.
See, I think you said the key word, younger. And I think that's what they're looking for, like with Richard Sherman and Cam Chancellor. They've been banged up the past couple of seasons, and Earl Thomas too. So I think they are trying to get younger. With that said, if that's your ultimate goal, then trade them, get a first round pick. I'll just start trading off everybody.
Yeah.
And that way you can, well, you, but then you'll throw everything on Russell Wilson and that offense, and I don't think that would be smart.
No.
So it's just, if they want to go younger, yes, trade them. If not, keep that group together while you're still in contention.
Right.
So we'll see. So speaking of another guy that wants to be traded, Jarvis Landry, he signed his franchise tag, and now he wants a trade. First of all, do you think he should want to leave Miami? And with that said, what is a good landing spot for him?
Is he good in Miami? I mean, I don't really know what Miami really has to offer. Well, first and foremost, the fact that you already play in a division with the Patriots, you're already playing all the way behind the eight ball. So that doesn't help their situation ever. I mean, that's pretty much chalking up probably two losses on during the season. So just being the AFC East, it's like it's already going to be hard to compete and try to make the playoffs. Maybe he's also trying to see the lighting on the wall that, hey, okay, maybe this is the way for me to just get out of this because, like, I want to use my prime years of my career and go play with the contender. So, I mean, there's definitely a couple of teams that come to mind. I think somebody like maybe he could go play with his buddy Odell Beckham in New York. I think that would be a good, great 1-2 combo there.
Yeah, that would.
You know, if they decide not to bring Brandon Marshall back, I think that might be a one way to go. The Cowboys would probably use him. You know, if they don't feel like they can get a true number one, because he's he is a number one, but he's kind of like at the middle of the pack of being a number one.
So do you think he's more reliable than Dez?
Oh, for sure. I think so. I think he's proven himself the last couple of years, and I think he knows that he can't ask for a trade if he doesn't feel like there's other teams that they would want him. You know, so, you know, somebody, a team that he could go to where they can kind of be like another, like with the Oakland Raiders, you know, they got Crabtree and Cooper. Like, you need to be able to go to a team that already has somebody that maybe they're not a top three, top five receiver, but they're still in the top echelon of receivers. So the defense has to respect both of you in order to, you know, play the game. So it's not just about being able to score points. It's just that being able to have that threat. And if that goes with already also having a running back, I mean, like the Cowboys do, I mean, it could be, you know, I'm not trying to put any good news or potential ideas in Jerry Jones' ear, but, you know.
Well, he may need it, so go ahead and throw that out there.
Yeah, so that's what the teams that come to my mind.
So what about the Colts? Do you think y'all could use them?
We could use them. I'm still, like, just so thrown off with everything that happened with the whole coaching situation. But, no, for sure, we could use him. But I think we more so needing somebody like him, I think we definitely need a suitable running back. Like, you know, I'm hoping that somehow, you know, Saquon Barkley falls to us in the draft. I think that would
be. What pick do y'all have?
We have the number three pick.
Well, you have a chance now.
I know.
If the Giants don't, I think the Giants are going to take him, though. I think he's going to be in New York. So hopefully he goes to the Colts, because I won't see that guy. That guy's a freak.
I don't want to go to the Browns, that's for sure.
Well, no, I don't think the Browns. I think they're going to go quarterback again. So,
yeah, they should. Yeah.
All right, back to Jarvis Landry. I'm thinking the Broncos, because I think they're not sure on Emmanuel Sanders. The Cardinals. If Kirk Cousins goes there, could you imagine Jarvis Landry with Fitzgerald?
Sure.
The Raiders, because from what I'm hearing, Crabtree may not be there.
Wow.
So you'll have Amari Cooper and Jarvis Landry. Can you imagine that? The Jags, because I think Allen Robinson may not be back.
Okay. Yeah, that would be right a solid pickup.
And like I said, the Colts. And the Cowboys, of course, I would love for him to come. And
well, anybody to go.
Yeah, pretty much. If he could play on the defensive line, it would be even better. All right, so let's talk about some of the guys that were out, Odell Beckham, David Johnson, or J.J. Watt. Which one do you think will have a better season next year?
I think Beckham is poised to probably have the best season. But I'm going to just say that David Johnson, just because of the volume that he gets, carries and stuff in that offense, I think he's also shown – he was, like, leading Russia, you know, the year before he was hurt. So I see David Johnson actually being that guy who's going to come back and have that season. J.J. Watt, he hasn't – even when he's been healthy, he hasn't really been the J.J. Watt that he was the first 3-4 years in the league. You know, but he's still a presence out on the field. So it'll, him getting, you know, so much attention does help the other defensive players to be able to get to the quarterback and stuff like that. And Odell Beckham, I would trust a little bit more. I just don't know, you know, Eli Manning, Odell Beckham, like the whole Giants situation. Like, you know, Eli's kind of on the back end of his career. Odell Beckham is basically getting into the prime of his career. And I just don't know if that's the right fit. Now, he can obviously catch a decent amount of touchdowns, probably catch like 10, 12 touchdowns and put up his numbers. But as far as having the better season overall, that will also probably result to wins, I'm going to go with David Johnson.
And I'm going to agree with you only because David Johnson had a wrist injury. Odell Beckham, ankle.
Yeah.
J.J. Watt, broken leg.
Right.
And he's been breaking down the past couple of seasons with his back and everything. So I think he's on the decline. So we both agree on David Johnson. It just depends on who's their quarterback.
Right.
Because you can have David Johnson, but right. we'll put 9-8 in the box.
Yeah.
And we'll go from there. Let's move on to something a little more serious. Rake Ruth. He was seeking custody of his 18-year-old son once he got out of prison, but since then he's changed his mind. What is your thoughts on the whole Rake Ruth situation?
I think for somebody that did what he did, you know, being in prison for all these years for murder of his child, the murdering of the mother of his child. I personally don't think he should be given custody, but that's what the acknowledgement of the 18-year-old actually doesn't really want to have a relationship with him. I would say that the 18-year-old son and Ray Karu, when he gets out, can actually have a relationship, but being able to have custody, it should kind of go through like you would, trying to go through, custodial privileges and things like that. I think it should be more done on like, kind of like how you would be doing an adoption. You have to go through phases and you have to go through some interview process and you have to go through some, certain situations to make sure that you can trust, legally you can trust Ray Karu to be able to like, take care of him and, do what he's supposed to do. And so that would be my route of saying, custody, and the 18-year-old son saying, yes, like I want my dad to be a part of my life and all of those things. But that would be the route that I would go, because I would never say like somebody doesn't deserve a second chance or doesn't deserve the rights to, their own child.
Yeah, I do agree with that. But his actions actually hurt his son more, because during that whole thing, his oxygen was cut off. And now, he's not able to function like a normal kid.
Right.
So for him, it's a touchy situation with me, because you tried to end his mother's life while your son was inside of her.
Right.
So now I wouldn't trust you to go in there and be in the room with him. Now I'm thinking, oh, is he going to finish the job now?
Right.
Because that's what he wanted. He didn't want that kid.
Right.
All you had to do was just say, hey, I just do like most of the deadbeat dads do. Just don't be a part of his life.
Right.
But you were an NFL star. I mean, you were decent with Carolina. You had a heck of a career at Colorado.
Oh, yeah.
And to just throw it away over this, over your son.
Right.
These words, your son,
right,
that you didn't want.
And now, all these years later, you feel remorse or whatever you want to call it, and feeling guilt. And so now you want to make up for it. But I think it should still be a process. If the custody is given, it better not be like one filing, one interview, paperwork done, and signed off. It should definitely be take a couple of years of long, lengthy discussions before it should be given. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. He should be able to see him, but on a limited basis. Yeah. I wouldn't give him that much access to him.
I agree.
All right, so now we're going to go down the lane, and one of the first things I want to talk about is the Rockets GM, Daryl Morey, saying that James Harden is the greatest ISO player of all time. Do you agree with him?
No, I don't. I think he's definitely up there. I think as far as being able to have, so many different options playing isolation. But I think Michael Jordan is, to me, still one of the, the greatest ISO player. And I also think, Kobe's up there too. Now, James Harden is definitely in that conversation already. And if he keeps it up for a couple more years, but at the end of the day, for me, like, he can be the greatest ISO player. I mean, you can do that on the streets. You can do that during practice. But does it lead to wins and a championship? Because I feel like if he wins a championship, then you can cement him definitely up there. And if he keeps doing it for a couple more years and maybe even gets another ring or goes to another finals, then, yeah, I could definitely see him, because he's not even a triple threat. He's like a quadruple threat out on the court. I mean, being able to drive by you, and finish at the rim. Even if he can't finish at the rim, getting fouled and go to the free throw line, he's like, 87-88% for his career. Then obviously hitting the three ball. And then also, he's also willing and great passer too. So, I mean, you really can't go wrong. I knew like the year, it was the year after the Mavs won where we had the lockout, a lot of those NBA guys were picking up, playing pickup basketball during the summertime. And all of those guys said, and this is why he was still on the Thunder, all those guys, would come out and say, like, during the summertime, like, James Harden is the most difficult guy to guard playing pickup because you don't know what to do because he's going to shake and bake. You think he's going one way, he's going the other way. And, you know, he might hit you with a step back. He might go all the way. If he gets you to pump, you know, if you fall for a little hesitation and you jump, he's going right past you. So from back then, I knew, I was like, man, if these professional guys, KD, LeBron, you know, Kyrie, all these guys are saying, like, he's that difficult to guard, then he must be really, really, really good. And then, you know, once he got traded from the, you know, Thunder to the Rockets, I mean, it was just like open sesame. And then now once Mike D'Antoni came, it's even more like, hey, here you go. Here's the ball. You know, do whatever you want with it because you're that great. And so I got to give it to him. But I can't agree and say that he's the greatest ISO player of all time presently.
Well, there's not many things I like about Houston. I like Beyonce's from Houston.
Oh, yeah.
But I think the GM is on to something here.
Okay.
I think James Harden is the greatest ISO player of all time. You said he's a quadruple threat.
Mm-hmm.
Can he shoot better than Jordan?
Oh, for sure.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think he can create his own shot better than Jordan. He definitely has better handles than Jordan and Kobe.
Mm-hmm.
So I would have to agree with that, man. I've never seen somebody. Did you see what happened to the other night to Wesley Johnson?
Yeah, I did.
So I haven't seen anything like that in my life. That was just funny. The fact that he just stood there, paused, looked at the guy, waited till he got up,
rolled the ball in his hands,
and then shot it.
Yeah,
he can get to the goal whenever he wants to. He probably leads the league in free throws, right? Just getting to the line,
mm-hmm. First or second.
He has one of the best, the sweetest left hand jumpers I've ever seen,
for sure.
So I think he's on to something, man. And the only thing about Harden, he doesn't do this in the playoffs.
Exactly. And that's for me. He's got to just prove that. Even if he can even just somehow beat the Warriors, go to the finals and lose them, but play the way he plays, then I can be like, okay, you know what? I got to give it to him. Because I'm just like you. I'm not a big, you know, I'm a Dallas person, but at the same time, I'm going to call it like it's like I respect the Rockets. I respect what they're doing. Like, I think they have a great chance to give the Warriors a run for their money. I would hate to see that. But at the end of the day, I know it's good for the league. So for the overall landscape of things, it's good for them to be good and them to have better than a fighting chance. The way they're playing right now, if they were to play a 7-game series starting tomorrow, like, I mean, it would literally be a pick 'em.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't have said that coming into the season because people were like, oh, James Harden and Chris Paul, ball dominant guards, are they going to play well together? But at the end of the day, for both of those guys, it's like, well, we could talk about it. They're going to win 60, 62, 65 games. Okay, that's great, but what are you going to do in the playoffs? Because until you prove that I'm not going to disappear in games, I can go 3-for-15, but I'm still going to keep playing and playing and be aggressive and just start passing the ball, start doing things that you're normally not accustomed to doing, then we're all going to question you. Like, oh, so you're just one of those guys who just wants to put up all these crazy stats during the season, but when it comes to playoffs, you just feel too much pressure and anxiety in your body, and that takes over instead of just basketball instincts, and you don't seemingly want it bad enough. But, let's see what happens this year.
And I think you said pressure. He has Chris Paul now.
Yeah.
But the only thing about that, Chris Paul gets hurt. He gets hurt every playoff series.
Yep. Or right
every
before
year.
The playoffs,
yeah.
Right before the playoffs. During the playoffs.
So, yeah, if they can come together, man, that's going to be special.
That team is, man, just watching that game last night with the Celtics, that team is just, I mean, it's just like, they just have so many guys out there that, okay, all right, James Harden missing threes. Okay, now Chris Paul will shoot a couple threes. Oh, he's missing threes? Okay, we'll pass to Eric Gordon. He'll make a couple threes. Oh, he's got our issue. Trevor Reason, why don't you shoot a couple threes?
You got
Trevor Reason. Okay, why don't all y'all can't shoot? Okay, PJ Tucker, Ryan Anderson. Okay, one of us will shoot threes too. It's just, I'm like, good Lord. Gerald Green coming off the bench. Joe Johnson they picked up. I'm like, and the reason Mike D'Antoni is successful, like they talked about on the telecast last night, because he pretty much is like, yeah, he'll run sets and stuff like that, but their sets are pretty simple. It's like 3 or 4 sets. It's pick and roll with James Harden, pick and roll with Chris Paul, and if you double Clint Capella rolls to the rim, he gets 2 points. If you help off of the 3-point shooters and come down and collapse on him, he kicks it back out to those 3-point shooters. So it's literally like, you know, 4 perimeter shooters and 1 big. It's kind of like what you would say, I think it was 2009 when Orlando with Dwight Howard, you had all those three-point shooters, Turkoglu, Rashard Lewis, Jameer Nelson, you know, all those guys on the team. It's the same kind of dynamic, so but just on steroids.
Could you imagine if they would have kept Dwight Howard, though?
Orlando?
No, I'm talking about Houston.
Oh, Houston? I don't think it would be the same fit. I just think, because I don't really know how you could have channeled all of that in to keep the same players and, like, how you would have been able to still get Chris Paul. And I, like, if Dwight Howard is still there, they don't get Chris Paul. Like, there's so many different moving parts and dynamics, you know, with salary cap and contracts and stuff like that. So, no, this is what they need. Like, because Mike D'Antoni, look at his, even when Dwight Howard played with the Lakers, like, he doesn't really care for a dominant big man. He just needs somebody who can play defense, roll to the basket, you know, make layups and dunks, and that's it. And if you can be above 60% free throw shooter, you can be on my team any day. That's Mike D'Antoni's philosophy. And he lets his players play very freely. Like, hey, let's go play pickup. And we know who the good guys on our team are because we play together all the time. So he's the star on our team. He's the second star on our team. But I'm probably going to get the ball a lot because those guys get double teamed a lot. So I just need to stand out here. And whatever I do in practice, just do it in the game.
Yeah, and they're not selfish either. So can you imagine this? We're both Rangers fans and Dallas Mavericks fans.
Mm-hmm.
The Houston Astros won the championship.
Mm-hmm.
The Houston Rockets may win the championship.
Yeah.
Do you see where I'm going with this?
I do.
We need to step up Dallas.
Yeah,
and
we do.
Speaking of Dallas, Mark Cuban, I'm sure everybody's heard this by now, he was fined $600,000 for his tanking comment and actually going to his team and telling them, hey, I think the best way for us to get better is to tank. What are your thoughts on that?
The fact that he actually comes out publicly and says it, I have a big problem with that. I mean, just keep that stuff in-house, man. I mean, we know other teams are doing it, too. Look at Philly. Like, they were doing it all these years, you know, with Embiid and trying to get number one pick and got Simmons and all this stuff. But it's just like, I don't understand why. I know you're being asked the question, but you can blatantly deny it. You can blatantly lie about it, and you don't have to give them the truth. And then knowing that you know that stuff like this, Adam Silver, the NBA, they're not going to put up with that kind of stuff. And it's happened in the past. I mean, it's just because of that is why – you know, they kept feeling like Philly kept doing this every year is why they even, you know, brought the Colangelos in there and put him, you know, into that franchise and they're actually turning things around. And just also knowing, like, you know, Magic Johnson got fined a couple of times. We're talking about Paul George just because he's on another team. So you're talking about tanking. You're talking about something that makes the sport look bad and you're saying you're intentionally doing it. Okay, intentionally do it, but don't talk about it. And I think don't publicize it because that just makes, like, me as a fan, like, well, why am I, even if I get dirt cheap or free tickets to go to the game to lower level, why am I going to go if I know the team's probably really not trying hard or giving it their best? Like, I don't want to go see that. And if you're somebody that's a father and has kids, I don't want to take them to see the Mavs where, like I want to be able to show them, like, oh, look how hard they're trying. Like, and I know in the back of my mind that they're really not trying. Like, no, I don't want to hear that from the owner of the team. I don't.
So how can – this is what I don't understand. As a competitor, if the owner comes to me and says, hey, tanking is the best way for us to, you know, get better, then let me go somewhere else.
Yeah.
I mean, you have young talent. Your whole job is you have Rick Carlisle, one of the best coaches in the NBA. He's there to develop talent. Right. So don't come to me saying, hey, let's get better by tanking. No, let's get better by you making smarter moves like – maybe not breaking up a championship team, giving them another year to come back. Mm-hmm. Maybe we shouldn't go out to Dwight Howard or DeAndre Jordan or Carmelo Anthony or anybody else that comes because we already know the pretty girl doesn't want to come to Dallas. And I don't know what it is. Dallas is a great city. We have a great organization.
Maybe it's income tax.
Yeah, maybe it's something going on with Mark Cuban that guys just don't like. Is it because that he runs his mouth so much? Because you can see how that affected us in some playoff games where he was buffing his gums. In
2006,
yeah,
that's why we lost the finals.
Yeah, because anytime one guy shoots 96 free throws and the team that he's playing against shoots 93, there's a problem.
Yeah.
So maybe if he shut his mouth and worry about some of the things that's going on in his organization, which we're going to talk about now.
Yeah.
Some of the sexual misconduct has been going on for, what, over 20 years?
Man, it's...
Not only that, your beat writer, Earl K. Sneed, he's been arrested, whether for domestic violence.
Twice.
Not only with his wife, also with a team employee.
Right.
And your CEO, I don't really know how to say his first name, but is it Ussery?
Yeah, Tredema Ussery.
Yes, he went up to a woman. I'm going to read everything that Sports Illustrated said. He went to one of the female employees. He said, so what are you doing this upcoming weekend? And the woman looked confused, and she didn't know what he meant. He said, you're going to get gangbanged, he asserted, aren't you? No, the woman responded, caught off guard. Actually, I'm going to the movies with friends. His response is, no, you're definitely getting gangbanged. How in the hell can you let this go on for 20 years? This is on your watch, too.
Yeah.
And you're concerned about tanking and not taking care of your female employees?
Yeah.
It's sickening. So if you were in charge, if you were Adam Silver, what would you do with this situation?
First and foremost, I hate saying this because I'm a Mavs fan. And I'm also kind of like similar to the Cole situation. Like, once I knew Andrew Luck was coming back, I was like, hey, we're not going to make the playoffs. Just keep losing because I'd rather get a higher draft pick. Same thing. I know by watching the Mavs, like, hey, I don't want you to really win a lot of games. But that's different than coming out and saying we're tanking, like, on purpose, you know? So, similar to that, I mean, just for the tanky comment, number one, first and foremost, you already got to probably take away that draft pick you were actually trying to tank for. I mean, I hope that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
But if I'm Adam Silver, that's what I have to do to teach somebody a lesson, number one. Number two, this whole sexual misconduct stuff that's been going on, and this was going on with this Tredema Ussery guy before even Mark Cuban even bought the team. So you knew what you were already walking into, and so how you would tame that and make sure that those kind of things don't really exist. Because one thing I can say is Mark Cuban's not an idiot. That's a smart gentleman. And to be where he is from where he, you know, was, you know, being 16, 18, 20, 21 years old and to being who he is today, he is way smarter than that to know that with all the things that are going on, I got to remove myself from this, or I got to make sure the people that are in charge or whatever is removed from this. And I don't know, because he has such a high position, Tredema Ussery does, like, where exactly did the ball get dropped as far as Mark Cuban not being able to enforce his ownership over that CEO? You know, there's got to be something else that made him, you know, not want to get rid of him or remove him from that position so he's not around, you know, that work environment. Then as far as Earl K. Sneed, that's the one I can't get away with, because he's just just like a random dude off the street. I mean, he's working for you. Yeah, he goes to games. You know, he goes to the in-between games, like, you know, different places like Buffalo Wild Wings and those kind of places, interviews fans. And, you know, he's one of those guys giving away tickets. Like, you know, you'll hear on the radio and stuff like that. But to have him, you know, go through something and then, like, you're not going to even be willing to read the report of what actually happened until way years later after the fact. Like, what does that do? I just don't. The same guy who was, you know, they were asking a lot of questions when it came to the Donald Cerny situation, and he was making all these comments and remarks about it. Well, you, at that time, because that was happening after all this is already going on, and I would have been like, okay, I need to make sure this has never come back to bite around me, so let me go ahead and get rid of this Earl K. Sneed guy right now, so that, hey, I nipped it in the bud when I got it, even if the report comes out 2-3 years later, because whether it's Sports Illustrated or whoever else, Associated Press, Yahoo, whoever, you know, as years and years go by, even if there's something that happened 5 years ago, if that so-called employee maybe doesn't work there and you go whistleblow to somebody and then they start doing some investigation, these are the kind of things that come out. This happens in a lot of different franchises. Just like we talk about college players getting paid, recruiting or whatever, it happens everywhere. But the problem is did you at least handle it? Like, it'd be one thing, it's like, oh, this went on with the Mavs. But at the same time, Mark Cuban handled it, took care of it. So the team doesn't have to worry about those kind of conduct because they have put things in place to where that this no longer happens. But right now, if this comes out and it makes you look like you didn't do anything, it's just like, I mean.
Because it was multiple reports. Multiple reports.
Right.
And if I'm Adam Silver, you already said you're tanking. You already criticized the referees. And you pretty much let a culture go on for over your whole tenure as the, you know, owner of the Mavericks.
Yeah.
So what I would, if I was him, even though I don't want this to happen, I would go to Mark Cuban. I would say, you may want to find somebody to come and, you know, get this team from you because we're done.
Yeah.
Because I think Adam Silver, he's a guy, he's not going to play with this. You see, the Donald Sterling, he stepped in right away, get rid of the team.
Right.
And I think this may be another example of, hey, it may be time for you to go.
Yeah.
And speaking of getting paid, let's talk about the Arizona thing that's going on. $100,000 for a player? Is it that serious, Serge?
I know the coach came out the other day, Sean Miller. He came out and said that, you know, he didn't do anything. He didn't talk about any of that stuff. But I'm like, okay, you didn't talk about, or you didn't, they supposedly have a wiretap on you. The FBI has a wiretap. Why would the FBI say that they have a wiretap of you saying this when they, supposedly you're saying that they don't or you didn't do it? So, and then once the report came out, you don't coach the next game, and then you wait like 5 or 6 more days after the report comes out to actually have a press conference and talk and deny the reports. If I was that adamant, like that didn't happen, I'm coming out right then and there. I'm not waiting.
And then what?
Because I don't want you to question me, because now it's like, okay, what went on these last few days where you've talked to your attorney, your attorneys have reached out to, you know, the people that are investigating, you might have worked out a deal. I don't know, because it just smells too fishy for me to believe that this. And it's like, okay, of course, if you admit to it, like, you're probably worried about your job, number one. But what else is going to happen? This is going to be an ongoing story, which so many other guys is going to just keep coming out every year. We always find out something, if it's in football, if it's in basketball, if it's, you know, it's either getting paid, it's either students raping girls, not talking about it, you know, sexual misconduct, you know, domestic violence, or coaches and, you know, basically schools that let go or put it under the rug and sweep it under the rug and not actually take care of it. This is stuff that's going to continuously keep happening. I just, $100,000, I mean, it sounds like a lot, but I'm like, man, if that's what you got to do to go get the next possible, you know, superstar that's going to be an NBA, I mean, you know.
But my thing is, like you said, it took him 5 days to comment. And then you still read from a piece of paper. If you really didn't do it, just come from the heart. Just say everything straight from the heart. And if I'm paying a kid $100,000, we better win the championship. Because that's about 3 or 4 players. My thing is, now, I'm going to tell you, when I heard that, $100,000, I signed my kid up for basketball academy. He's starting in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Because if I'm a parent and somebody offers me $100,000 and we're struggling to make ends meet, hell yeah, we're going to Arizona. That's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
I would think any parent would do that.
Absolutely.
That's why we have to pay the players. So we can eliminate myths like this. You're still going to have people that are going to be overpaying for somebody for their services, but still.
Yeah.
These kids are working their butts off, and they can't get jobs because their whole focus is college.
Right.
So don't tell me that they're going there for academics. No, right. They're going there for their profession, you know?
Right.
So hopefully we can get that fixed. So let's move on to what's on our mind. Serge, did you know that there was doping in curling?
I didn't, and I'm just like, why would somebody in curling need to be doping to try to win? I'm just like, is it for concentration? Is it, you know, I don't get it. I mean,
and then
some of the sports, you know, that people end up getting caught for doing stuff. I'm just like, you're not getting an advantage because of doing it. So I'm having to think, it's got to be, it might even be like shoot, might be just be like smoking weed or something, you know. So they didn't come out and actually say what exactly kind of paraphernalia that this
person. Well, you know, he was Russian, so you know they were already on the list, already in the spotlight, and for doping, we made it the whole time.
Yeah.
And a guy that does curling.
Curling.
Got us in trouble.
Yeah.
That just amazes me.
Yeah.
So let's talk about another team that we don't really care for, the New York Yankees.
Yes.
With their addition of Stanton, does that make them the favorites to win it all?
No, I don't think so. I think it's another team I don't want to admit, but, man, that Houston Astros team.
God, I know, man.
It's
sickening.
Ridiculous.
We went back-to-back.
Right.
And all because of Nelson Cruz. I would never, ever forgive him for that. All he had to do was go back to the wall, catch the ball, and the Rangers are champions. If he does that, we win both of those. We win back-to-back.
Yeah.
I'm convinced. That just messed up everything. But back, what were we talking about, the Yankees?
Yeah.
Go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, you're good, man. No, I think the Houston Astros would actually, I think they're still right there. They got the pitching. They got Verlander, too. They got guys who are entering their prime, you know, Altuve, Correa, man, those guys are just, I mean, all of their young guys, Bergman, like they're all just really, really, really good. George Springer, I mean, just the way that they have their talent spread out and what parts of the field and what they can all do, they can hit for average, they can steal bases, they can hit home runs. And then they play like, you know, literally kids too, the way the enthusiasm is. And that's why I feel like they were so successful last year.
Yeah, you just see their love for the game. And the Rangers, we have one of the best farm systems.
Mm-hmm.
Why do we have to go out there and get Lipscomb? Why do we got to go get Bartolo Colon?
Right.
When we have one of the best systems and we can see what Houston did.
Right.
They just start throwing guys out there, younger guys, and developing them.
Developing them. Absolutely.
What is up with Dallas? We can't develop anybody. We just want to go out there and get people that are past their prime to try to get them to do something for us.
I don't know. It always feels like, for some reason, when it comes to all the sports teams here locally, we're always like a step behind. It's just like, if other people that come here are a fan of Dallas and they like not just the city, but they actually like, you know, some of the teams around here, then they're more willing to come here. But other than that, I don't know, you know, just because I always tell people, like, outside of having a beach, I mean, Dallas, we have everything else that you need, you know. So we got, you know, we got great people, we got good-looking people, we got good real estate.
Our women here are beautiful.
Oh, yeah, we got good real estate, got good weather. So I don't really, and job opportunities, everything is great here. So I don't really know what the answer is to that, but it kind of gets me back to thinking about Stanton and being with Aaron Judge. Kind of like when Mark McGwire and Jose Canseco were together with the Oakland Athletics.
The Bash Brothers.
But I think just because you have two guys that are going to just probably hit for a lot of home runs, especially in Yankee Stadium, they're going to hit a ton of home runs. And it's like, who do you pitch to? Who do you not pitch to? You know, and so you're going to have to just pick your poison at that point. And they got still got Gary Sanchez, too, which I didn't understand how Miami, when you're trading for him, why did you get at least Gary Sanchez in return? But that's near or there. No, I don't think so. I think, you know, because I still don't completely trust their pitching. You know, the Red Sox are always in the thick of things in the East because baseball is a sport that one or two guys, yeah, they can do a lot of damage. But at the end of the day, if you don't have pitching, the other team can hit you all day too. And then in the seven-game series, it's not always the best team that wins. It's always usually who had the better pitching that day ends up winning. You can have the overall better talent. But, I mean, the Dodgers are always going to be right there, too. So I definitely don't think just by getting Stanton, they're the favorite to win it all. They will be right there in the thick of things, probably with the Astros and the American League.
And I hate to agree with you, but Houston Astros, they're probably winning it again this year because the Rangers, we're going to throw Lincecum out there in Cologne.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to our wrestling segment, The Ringworm, and we're going to talk about the five best catchphrases of all time. So let me ask you, what is your best catchphrase of all time?
My best catchphrase would have to definitely be from my old school favorite wrestler, Bret Hart. The best there is, the best there was, and the best there will be. I mean, that in itself is like, you're just saying, like, I'm the best. Ain't nobody going to be better than me. Nobody was better than me before. Nobody's better than me now. Nobody will ever be better than me later. And to just be able to say that and then obviously back it up in the ring, because he showed, like, technicality-wise, in-ring wrestling, finisher, charisma, the whole nine yards, he had it. And so that's one of the reasons I really took a liking to him. And he was always, like, good with the kids, giving the shades to the kids when he comes out and, you know, every time he wrestles and stuff like that. So I would definitely have to go with Bret Hart. But there's so many good ones you can pick out from. I mean, like, you could pick wrestler after wrestler after wrestler. They all have one. So
see, I hate that we agree on so much stuff. Because that, honestly, that is the best one.
Yeah.
That's the best ever.
Yeah.
And he backs it up. Now, I'm going to tell you what my number two one will probably be. The limousine riding,
yeah,
jet flying,
yeah,
kiss stealing, will and dealing, son of a gun. Everybody knows who that is.
Yeah, everybody. And that's everybody in every sport knows Ric Flair. I mean, shoot, there's a music video that was the Migos, or I think it was Migos.
I think it is Migos.
Yeah, they put out a video of Ric Flair, and he's in the video because, you know, the song is kind of made after him, I guess you could say. So the limousine riding, jet flying, it's like, that's iconic. That is like where everybody, because not even everybody, if you're not a wrestling fan, you probably don't know Bret Hart's line. You don't even know probably Bret Hart. But if you're not a wrestling fan, you still know Ric Flair, because that willing, dealing, son of a gun, you're going to know about him, because every time he turns on TV, he's going to give you the woo. And that's, you know, and it's a wrap after that. I think Stone Cold's, that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so. It's also pretty, because when he said it, it was like he's going to throw the mic right after that, and he hits the glass shatters, and the music hits again. So it was all a build-up to it. It's like, get your, you know, bloods pumping. You know, it's awesome, man. It was great.
I wonder how much he helped with the whole beer selling, because I know that he had an influence, because I don't even drink beer. And I tried it, but I'm not drinking beer anymore. Back to Ric Flair. He also had another one that was similar to Bret Hart. To be the man, you got to beat the man.
Yeah.
It's just point blank. It's just so simple and just beautifully done. And their storytelling, it has a lot to do with it.
Yeah.
Now, you added one, The Rock.
Mm-hmm.
Do you smell what The Rock is cooking?
Yeah.
It's great. It's corny.
Yeah, it's great.
But it's great. He, you know, he has the whole, the people's eyebrow,
right,
elbow, and all of that.
Right.
The Rock is one of the best talkers ever. So let's talk about DX. They had another simple one.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not down with that, we got two words for you.
Suck it.
You know, hey.
So those guys, I mean, obviously, these are all obviously, for the most part, obviously coming from the Attitude Era and stuff like that, too. But I mean, you know, Macho Man had some good ones. Hogan had some good ones. I mean, there's a lot of guys who have, you know, even Chris Jericho, he'd be calling people Junior. And, you know, just saying different things. The Miz, I'm the Miz and I'm awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just so many different guys who bring that, because you have to really have that aspect. If you're not super great in the ring, you're like mediocre, but you can get it on the mic, you can make it a long way in wrestling.
And I don't think Chris Jericho gets enough credit. I think I've said this on another podcast, like you said, calling people Junior. Oh, really? You just made the list.
Yeah.
And would you never be ever be the same again?
Yeah,
the dude, he recreates himself every time he comes back. And once he leaves the sport altogether, it'll never be another Chris Jericho.
No, absolutely.
That dude, I'm glad you mentioned him.
Yeah.
That's one of my favorite wrestlers of all time.
I think Edge and Christian, I think
The Peep Show.
They were great what they did.
You got the Hardys.
The Hardys, the Dudley Boys.
The Dudleys, man. The Hall of Fame. They're about to be Hall of Fame Dudleys.
Yeah, the Hall of Fame Dudleys. No, I mean, it's like you can kind of really pick and choose, because nowadays, you don't really have. I mean, obviously, if you're a John Cena fan, obviously he's maybe one that's probably has something. Roman Reigns doesn't really have anything going for him.
Yeah, because those two guys are one and the same. It's somebody that they're forcing down our throats.
Right.
Because did you get a chance to see the Elimination Chamber?
Yeah, I did partially.
Braun Strowman eliminated five guys.
Right.
And Roman Reigns was able to just take him out.
Right.
It's just terrible storytelling. That's why I still don't
understand why they're not allowing Braun Strowman to be the guy.
Well, he's a new Daniel Bryan. He's just bigger. I think this is what they're doing. They're trying to, where eventually they're not going to have a choice but to put the championship belt on him, because Roman Reigns is going to beat Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania, which is an absolute joke.
Yeah.
Braun Strowman decimated him and Kane, and Brock Lesnar somehow came and won. We need better writers in the wrestling. I think that's what it is, because we have they have the athletes. They have the right people, and especially from the women. I love the way that they're doing Asuka?
Yeah.
She's going to win every match.
Yes.
Come on, man.
Trying to beat another Goldberg.
Come on. Now, what they need to do is put Paul Heyman in her corner, then people really get behind her. But I think that they actually like her. I like the whole women's division, and I really like the new
wrestler. They got a lot of talent.
What's her name? Mandy something? Have you seen her?
No.
She's on Raw?
I haven't seen her.
Oh, my God.
Really?
I'm going to show you a picture of her in a minute.
Okay. And I'm going to check her out tomorrow on Raw.
Yeah, please do that.
And Ronda Rousey, too.
Oh, yeah. I like when she first came out. I was like, because you could tell she was, the nerves were there.
Of course.
But this Monday night, when she came out, she took care of her business. Yeah. I love that segment. I don't think a lot of the women are happy that she's there, but she can only boost what y'all have already created.
Absolutely. And put it on a whole different stratosphere, because you're basically going to have non-wrestling fans who are UFC fans,
yes,
but who are, like, there's a lot of women who started watching UFC just because of Ronda Rousey, and probably don't watch it now because she's not in it. Like, they don't watch Amanda Nunes. They don't watch Chris Cyborg last night beat the crap out of somebody.
Yeah, that was a joke, man.
Ooh, geez.
Stop the fight.
She needs to be the best of it. She is beast. You're gonna have those avid Ronda Rousey fans who kind of just was that person that sports in general needed from a female standpoint, for young little girls to be able to know that, like, hey, there's somebody who isn't, like, you know, she's above average looking, but
yeah,
I don't think she's like, oh my God, drop dead gorgeous, but you don't have to be, but you can still be a badass in the ring and do what you do and beat people up in like 25 seconds, 30 seconds, 50 seconds, just battle, put you on the ground, get you in the arm lock, and you're done. You're tapping out. And it was just so awesome to have, like, the hype, the build, and how she was. Like, she's one way. When she does interviews, she's like your typical girl. She's just bubbly, all this stuff. But once she comes out that ring, man,
she already had that stare down.
Yeah.
That was perfect. I was, oh, yeah, you scared me. But let me ask you this. Do you think that they're wasting this opportunity with Rousey just to have her and Kurt Angle tag team against Stephanie McMahon and Triple H, or are they just bringing her in slowly?
Yeah, they're bringing her in slowly because, you know, it's going to take her a while because it's hard to teach both at the same time, which is doing the in-ring actual wrestling, and at the same time also teaching you how to get the charisma and do the whole microphone talking and giving out the attitude, facial expressions, and things like that. So to try to train her on both at the same time and putting her right into it, because, you know, maybe if she came around closer to SummerSlam last year and then slowly build her into Royal Rumble and WrestleMania, as opposed to, like, you're basically giving her like a 3-month window, and it's like, I don't really know if that's enough time for somebody like that to just come in and to do all that. So I think long term, that's what the goal is, to try to groom her so that she's, you can look at her one day and be like, if I could be a first-time person and see, like, oh, man, she's a good wrestler. She's good on the mic. She's got good charisma. And you wouldn't have to look at her like, oh, she was in the UFC, and because of that, she got, you know, transferred into there or whatever. I think that's what the ultimate goal is. And And like you said, you saw the improvement just in a past couple of weeks, going from Royal Rumble to the nerves. I'm sure it's not something that she's used to, because she's used to going to the ring with 18,000 people, yeah. But she's already in her gear when she comes out. She comes out, she gets patted down, she gets a little cream on the face, boom, boom, check your gloves, okay, ready to go, and you're running around in the ring. Now you have to kind of like, okay, I'm walking down the ring, I got to look at the fans, I got to like make eye contact, I got to give a smile, I got to guard the mic, and then I got to like show like I'm mad, I'm angry, like I don't like you, you know. So it's like there's just a lot of things that they have to teach her and, you know, educate her on, especially when it comes, because you know, wrestling is really only half the battle, and she's going to be good at a lot of technical things, but there's also areas when it comes to ground wrestling.
Yeah,
that she's
grappling. Yeah.
Grappling and then coming off the top rope and stuff like that. Playing the ropes is not something you ever really had to do in the octagon. You know, it's the octagon, right? So,
and one of the things I'm hoping is after WrestleMania, you can have a women's tag team division. Could you imagine Asuka and Ronda Rousey together?
Yeah.
You can, the build they can have with that, and you can finally have like maybe Bayley or Sasha Banks be the one to take them down.
Right.
So I can't wait to see that. Now let's talk about wrestling in Texas. We have a wrestling in Texas. A transgender teen. I didn't get his name.
No, I don't.
He was booed after he beat a female competitor to advance to the state championships, which he went on to win his second state title. What are your thoughts on that?
And you're saying he, because he was born.
He was born. Oh, excuse me. Now he is wants to be a she.
Okay.
We'll just say transgender, because we don't want to offend anyone.
Right. Sure. I agree. Okay. Man, this is one of those topics where it's like, which side do you pick? And you could probably be wrong picking on either side.
But you know what? Let me go, because I'm going to pick a side.
Okay. Go ahead.
We've already talked about this off mic. If you were born a guy, wrestle against guys. You can still want to be a woman, but can you still wrestle against guys that you can actually compete against? It's not really a competition. You're going to be stronger than most women, not all. You're going to be stronger than most of them. So getting in the ring for 2 years straight and dominating them, how does that make you better?
So do I get ready in the men's locker room, or do I get ready in the women's locker
room? No, you have to get ready in the other room. That's because, you know, it's supposed to be another restroom, another room, another transgender room. It's just, I'm all for you being who you are, who you feel you are.
Sure, I agree.
But when it comes to sports, I remember it was a UFC guy that was transgender.
Mm-hmm.
Went there and beat the hell out of a woman. I mean,
that's assault.
It's wrong.
Yeah.
Compete against your own. You know what? Go ahead.
It's like one of those. Why don't we come in and do your physical? And while we're doing your physical, we're going to determine which type of people you should be able to wrestle. Oh, you got a couple of those down there. All right, you go make sure you wrestle against the man. Oh, you don't have anything? Okay, you can. You gotta wrestle against the women. And I think, yeah, like you said, it boils down to what were you born as. I don't care what kind of surgical procedure you get done, whatever you do, or if it's just a feeling aspect of it, no. Whatever you were born as should be what you should be treated as, number one. I mean, I believe that in life in general, but definitely when it comes to competition where you cannot get a decisive competitive advantage, you know, one way or the other, you know what I mean? So, because there are sports, obviously, I feel like they're, you know, maybe even women are better than men at, you know? And so you wouldn't want, a man going in there and be able to just, or a woman coming in and being able to just dominate because, oh, she's coming into a man's sport where women are actually better at it. You know, it could go both ways, but it's always going to be a man going into women's sports that's always going to be somewhat a little more normal seeming. And I agree. I don't think it's right. And those people have. And the funny thing is, I was noticing this person actually won a championship for the second year in a row.
Yeah, it's two years
in a row. So this all of a sudden wasn't a story last year. Like, how is this not a story to where this escalated to where, like, hey, we need to figure out why? Because maybe they would have put out enough notices and let the people that are competing to let their parents know, like, hey, this person's competing and we decided on this that they can do because of this and this and this. But, like, why wasn't this an issue last year when this person's already been it? Like, they've already gone through it. Now it's like, well, yeah, I'm used to beating up girls. I mean,
we're not saying that we're against anybody that's transgender. We just prefer that you, if you were born a man or a boy, compete against the boys. If you were born a woman, not saying that you're not capable.
Right.
We're not saying that at all. We just want it to be an even, fair playing ground.
No. Yes. Like Ric Flair said, to beat the man, you got to
be the man. Or you can be the woman. I don't know. It's crazy. Hey, thank you for listening to episode 10 of Sports Life Talk, where life without sports is just talk. I'm KT, that's Serge. I want to thank the Roberts Media Group for allowing us to have this platform along with Blog Talk Radio. We will see you next week for episode 11. Have a good day.
All my life, been grinding all my life. Sacrifice, hustle, pay the price. Want a slice, got to roll the dice, that's why. All my life, I've been grinding all my life. Look.